Welcome to the Law Shit You Should Know podcast. We're here to talk a little bit about the law
and a whole lot about nothing. Every week, we have a new guest to discuss current events, legal drama, and dive even deeper into
the Law Shit You Should Know. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Law Shit You Should Know with Alina Santana.
And Leslie Marenko.
And the amazing James Schwitala.
Hello there, everybody out in podcast world.
In podcast land.
We're going to be famous, Schwitala.
We're not famous yet.
I mean, we kind of are, but like we're going to be more famous.
Are we famous already?
Infamous.
Well, Jimmy, just for those who don't already know who you are, can you tell everyone who's watching and listening who you are, what you do?
I am a bankruptcy lawyer. I am a native of South Florida. I've been here my whole life.
Weird. Already weird, but yeah, okay.
I represent mostly debtors.
I am a native of South Florida who's been here.
There's no people like you, really. I mean, nobody's really
special,
born and raised here. Like
special unicorns.
Especially old people. Unicorns. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, they all left. They all said, fuck this dumpster fire. We're out of here.
No, yeah. Like, last one took the flag.
Fucking train wreck. Like,
and back to Jimmy's introduction.
And back to Schwitala.
Keep going. I'm sorry.
So bankruptcy lawyer. Native of South Florida. Yes, I passed the CPA exam in Texas. I came to Florida, back to Miami after undergrad, and never got that fifth year that I needed to get the Florida CPA to reciprocate. But whatever,
you're not doing audit statements.
No. But it's nice to be able to understand how a financial statement works.
Yes, that is nice. So, talk to us about bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy. What do you want to know?
I want to know about the different types of bankruptcy.
All right. Well,
let's start there, and then we'll go.
Broad division between consumer and commercial. So those are the two big divisions. Consumer would be like for individuals, families, couples.
And they have chapters.
There's chapters.
Which, what are the numbers? Help me out.
Well, the chapters, for the most part, are available in both consumer and commercial.
Oh, okay. All right.
So for consumer, you can file a Chapter 7.
Okay, Chapter 7.
And it's only
liquidation.
It's only Chapter 7 if you haven't asked enough questions, right? And I have to give props to my good buddy Mitch Nowak, who came up with that.
Okay.
He's also a bankruptcy lawyer, but he's right. Because Chapter 7 trustees in South Florida are very aggressive.
Yes.
And they have powers.
Very interesting case law comes from those guys.
Right.
Trying to extend their powers, in my opinion.
Yes, yes. And what you do is you try to help the client improve their situation, not make it worse. So
maybe commit less fraud than what they're trying to do when they first walk into your office.
Unfortunately, sometimes they don't tell you the truth. Even though you're trying to help them, they don't tell you the truth. So broad
Leslie,
division.
Not everyone walking into an office to file bankruptcy is committing fraud.
Of course not, Alina.
For the record.
As we know, all of our clients collectively always don't tell us 100% of the truth.
Oh, no, people lie.
So can you imagine when you are...
As Dr. House would say, everybody lies.
Okay.
Healthy people don't go to the doctor, right? So people with problems, sometimes they're problems of their own creation, but sometimes they're not.
Okay, so that was Chapter 7.
All right,
there is a reorg for the person.
Yes.
This is law school memory right now.
Chapter 13.
There you go. 13.
That could also be subchapter 5.
And those trustees
and that could be Chapter 11.
Need to have a warm heart.
I don't know. Not so much. It's just the bankruptcy code limits their powers. If they had more power, they would have black, cold hearts like the Chapter 7 trustees. Sorry.
Got it.
Sorry to all my Chapter 7 trustee buddies and their counsel.
Excellent.
And then in commercial entity cannot file a Chapter 13, but they can file a 7 or an 11 or a subchapter 5. So then looking at the chapters, those are also broadly divided into two categories. One is liquidation, which is Chapter 7, regardless of whether you're consumer or commercial.
Okay.
And then there's reorganization, as you so
That's
correctly.
How they did it in law school. There's liquidation and reorganization, guys.
That's right.
Well, so for the people listening, we have no idea what those two words mean. So when we talk about liquidation, what does that mean?
Well, it means liquidation of non-exempt assets and potentially recovery of transfers that you made.
So selling all your shit.
Shit that's not protected from creditors.
Okay. And what is protected?
The exempt shit.
What is the exemption? Give me an example.
Okay. Your homestead. That's the
homestead property.
That's the most famous exemption in the state of Florida. Right. Your homestead is protected from the claims of creditors.
So let me give you an example.
Okay. let's start with a hypothetical.
A hypothetical.
someone decides, you know, somebody goes to see you, Schwitzal, and you tell them these parameters, right?
Right.
Hey, if you have all this cash sitting in your bank account, you know, that's not exempt, but your home is. And then they do something. They think they're so slick. They're so smart, you know, especially here in Miami.
Right.
And they go, you know, I've always wanted that granite and gold kitchen.
Right.
Like 18 karat faucet type thing.
It's a sunny place for shady people, Leslie. Sunny place for shady people.
$100,000. And, right. and you know, Schwitzal over here told me that my homestead is very protected.
Yeah.
And now they don't see how somebody could possibly know this as if there aren't some things as fucking bank statements where you see in and out,
right?
It's not that hard, guys. You don't need to be a forensic accountant to figure out basic, like, money in, money out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go pump $180,000 into this beautiful kitchen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is Chapter 7 trustee potentially able to go rip out their fucking granite countertop and go, oh, you think you're cute? You think you're slick?
Like, yeah, exactly. So in bankruptcy, there are potential limitations to the homestead exemption. And kind of what you described is a potential 522-0 situation where the trustee can limit your homestead exemption to the extent you've converted non-exempt assets, i.e. the money you described in the bank, into exempt homestead. Now, not all money in the bank is non-exempt. Sure. Some money in the bank can be exempt shit. And exempt shit is good shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if they converted exempt shit into exempt homestead, it's okay.
It's all right.
It's only a problem if you convert the non-exempt shit into exempt homestead.
And do they actually need to use, like, the fraudulent transfer statute to claw it back, or is it easier than that? Do they have to prove all that bullshit that we usually do?
No, it's just an objection to claimed exemption, and then they have to. So now that limitation only applies in bankruptcy court. If they do that two-step that you described, and then they don't file a bankruptcy, and a creditor sues them and gets a judgment against them, the creditor could not go against the homestead.
Right.
This is a limitation that was included in the bankruptcy code back in 2005 when they changed the bankruptcy code. So sometimes I tell my clients, thank you for being honest with me. You told me where all the skeletons are hidden and where all the, you know, problems are. You might not want to file a bankruptcy. You might just want to stay outside of bankruptcy.
And I imagine that's your actual advice quite a bit of the time when you come and see somebody.
But definitely if it exists, I'll tell them, you know.
Well, I don't just mean like in the sketchy sense. I mean, in general, I would imagine some people come to you and go, I want to file a bankruptcy. And when you actually start digging into stuff, you go, maybe not the best idea.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Or maybe it's better to go into that Chapter 13.
Right. Yes. Right? So Chapter 13, the trustee doesn't have strong arm powers. So the Chapter 13 trustee cannot touch things.
You're not ripping out your granite.
They cannot take things. They cannot sell things. They cannot sue people. And those are all things that a Chapter 7 trustee can do.
Well, let's take a step back, because I think we're assuming that people listening even know what a trustee is. So what is a trustee, and how does that
A trustee is all your creditors rolled up into one person.
Okay.
With a lot
that's,
of power.
That's the way to... That's the way to think of them.
And who picks who the trustee is?
So in Chapter 7, there's a panel of trustees. And when you hit the button and file the case, the court's computer just selects
a wheel.
It's allegedly.
How do you get on this wheel, Shatala?
Yes, how do you get on the wheel? It's a much coveted spot.
I see.
It's a much coveted spot.
Yes.
So, those spots don't open up very.
I imagine
they open up less frequently than a B&I realtor chair. Sorry for all those people who don't know what a B&I realtor chair is. It's a very lucrative position to be in.
And is this true? I've heard the bankruptcy trustees get paid their lawyers, right? Generally speaking, right? So they get paid their hourly wage, and then they get paid a percentage of what they can collect for their. They're creditors.
Seriously?
The creditors, right.
Really?
So, yeah.
You have great motivation to do good for your clients.
Oh,
your creditor, which is essentially who you're representing.
They're well motivated.
They're well motivated.
They're well motivated.
To take things on appeal and create new case law in my world that really fucking upsets me. Yes.
And I tell you, they're all very good at what they do.
They are.
Yes.
They are.
There are some areas where I practice, for example, in the Middle District, and I am of Florida, and I am...
That is a special...
I'm able to observe significant differences in the level of aggression between Chapter 7 trustees in the Middle District and down here. So they're very good at what they do. So to elaborate a little bit more on what you just described, the Chapter 7 trustee is entitled to a commission, and it's a published commission. It's included within the federal rules of bankruptcy procedure. 28 U.S.C. And it's their commission isn't super, super generous. But if you're a Chapter 7 trustee and you happen to be a lawyer and you can go to the court and say, you know, I've got this case where I'm the Chapter 7 trustee and here's the list of the Chapter 7 trustee duties. But I also need to do some things that are on my list of attorney for Chapter 7 trustee. So, yes. Judge, will you approve me to hire me as my attorney for myself?
Of course. Of course. Me so, and my law firm.
So, no? So yes, absolutely.
I love that.
So
me
the
and
chapter,
my law firm.
So the Chapter 7 trustee many times is able to recover Chapter 7 trustees' fees as well as Chapter 7 attorneys' fees. And then, you know, sometimes they get their other friends involved. People like accountants and consultants and
the people
appraisers
play golf with on the weekends.
And brokers and stuff like that.
Are there a lot of trustees? How many people are we talking
about? I think there's probably in the Southern District, which would include, there's three divisions. There's Miami, there's Fort Lauderdale, and there's the West Palm Beach division.
Sure.
But that actually it includes Monroe, and it includes points north of Palm Beach as well. So the Southern District, I'm going to say there's probably somewhere around, you know, 15 or so
that
Chapter 7
nothing.
Trustees.
That's not a lot.
Right.
How we get in on this inner wheel?
For
this
real?
Is fantastic.
Yeah, there's
this idea.
No vacancies right now.
You are not on the list, Marinko. Relax.
There are no vacancies right now. The vacancies only happen when somebody
dies.
Well, yeah, but there's an incentive not to die. Not too long ago, we had a trustee who got caught stealing.
No.
And so
I was actually going to say got disbarred. That was going to be my guess. When
I think
said
she
died.
Might have been disbarred later as well. But no, she got caught and I think she did some time in Club Fed.
Oh, that's nice.
But stealing from maybe but not from the bankruptcy. No.
From,
stealing what?
Stealing money from her trust account.
Oh, just generally.
But all of the trust money was related to administration of From what I recall.
From what's been published.
Allegedly.
My best recollection.
My best recollection from the Miami Herald.
My best recollection.
Uh-huh.
She's probably out now.
Oh, already?
Well, it's been a long time.
It's just a financial
effect. No big deal. Big misunderstanding.
Another district, I mean.
It was an accounting
You know, it's
error.
Funny that you said that. It's funny that you said that because one time I was representing a mortgagee in a foreclosure here, but the a debtor filed in the Middle District of Florida, and there was no reason for them to file. They filed a Chapter 7. It was basically, you know, I was going after this guy hard to recover attorney's fees from my client because my client was like, just about ready to foreclose and get this property back. And they filed this bad faith Chapter 7 in the Middle District. And I was going after him as hard as I could. And the judge, I'm not going to say which judge it was, but his comment was, you know, we have a lot of fraud up here in the Middle District. And that was his justification for not awarding the attorney's fees. Now, I was seeking to get the attorney on the hook too, because the attorney was really at fault. The party didn't know anything. It was the attorney who was filing this bankruptcy in bad faith. So, so differences between the Middle District and the Southern District.
But, wait, are we thinking there's more fraud in the Middle District?
Yeah, I'm not saying he was accurate. Yeah, I'm not saying he was accurate.
I think Miami is really where the fraud is at.
I'm not saying he was accurate. I'm just saying that was his justification
his
for not awarding attorney fees because there's a lot of fraud.
I'm like, you ain't seen nothing yet, my friend. No, I don't
his,
know what you're thinking happens
amusing,
in Orlando.
I think is the point. His perception was amusing. No,
may I have a sip from my bejeweled cup?
Oh, yes, our bejeweled, very shiny, tacky ass glasses. Of course, it is all yours.
Much better. Thank you.
We swear there's water in there. Schwatala is very healthy.
Yeah, yeah, it's water.
We want to talk about the bike ride. Schwatala. Which is one? No drop bike ride. Schwatala is like a professional bicyclist.
No.
Cyclist. That shows how much I know about this. And he has a very infamous no drop. What is it? Bike?
Well, it's not.
No, it's a lie.
We're not doing it anymore. But at one point, it was allegedly.
I almost died on this.
It was allegedly the no drop bicycle ride. And
it's a no drop bicycle ride. Meaning
Leslie showed up on her bicycle from sixth grade.
I didn't have a bicycle.
I was like, I'm so surprised you
don't have a bicycle.
No, she shows up on this bike. Okay. It's like.
Someone brought me a bike.
Oh, God.
Okay. I have not ridden a bike since I was probably eight.
That was obvious.
For the wreck. That was very obvious.
From the get go.
And we are.
I got to hand it to you. You know,
and I almost died. And let
no,
me be
it's
very
true.
Clear. Schwatala left me behind. Okay,
think how surprised that car was when you ran into the passenger side door. I mean,
that was his fault.
Now that I reflect back on it,
just you know, I literally just bam into a car. I couldn't brake.
Now that I reflect back on it, and I give it thought. I'm like, that was a really brave thing for you to do.
Kids, yeah. Like, you would go backwards on the pedal.
Right.
Well, bikes aren't made like that anymore.
No.
You're just like,
oh. Yeah. So when you go backwards, the pedals just go backwards, and the bike keeps going forward.
I just bam, into this car's, like, passenger door.
Oh, that was.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna owe this guy money for slamming into this car. Yeah. This poor person is like, this bitch is gonna sue me. You know, we had a misunderstanding.
Officer, he hit me.
Yeah. He pulled right out in front of me. I forget who it was that I sent back to help you get back to the parking lot. Oh, Blas. I think so. So Blas decided he was going to take one for the team.
I later got babysat.
And help
Wait,
you.
So no drop. Does that mean?
That means as you ride slow enough so the slowest person
doesn't
but
he
fall
never
off the back of the pack.
Perceived that there would be a Leslie in this
you were
Well,
slow.
Leslie, yes. But Leslie at that level of performance, no.
I mean, honestly.
It was not something that was foreseeable.
It was like, I'll try anything once, but guys, I don't even know if I can ride a bike. I mean, I was honest.
No, listen,
when I was invited on this.
The bravery, the level of bravery
and
now as I look back.
It started raining in my defense.
Oh, the road was
slick. It was drizzling.
Man, you remember the details. Drizzling. This is like seared into your
traumatized
mind.
From it.
She's
like,
traumatized.
I couldn't like move for like a day after this bike.
You
ride.
Seem traumatizable to
so
me.
Much pain. I'm like, my back hurts. My leg hurts. This is terrible. I'm never doing
my
this
neck,
again. Like,
my ego is destroyed.
Yeah, but what
the words for her
what
ego.
I didn't know, okay, because I don't know anything about sports, obviously, and I certainly don't know anything about cycling, but I've been told by several people after that happen to know you in this context, that if you would have started bicycling, I guess, when you were younger, you would have absolutely been a professional paid to do this. You started this a little later in life.
Because he's that good.
You're very young, but you're no spring chicken,
right?
So the fact that you started and you're so fucking good is mind-blowing to certain people. And I can't even remember who this was. These aren't, like, people that I thought knew
Probably
you.
Probably Oscar.
And no, maybe. But, I mean, I mentioned, you know, when somebody asked me for a bankruptcy lawyer or something, another lawyer, and I go, oh, Schwatala. And they go, oh, my God, have you seen that guy ride a bike? And I'm like, the fuck do you know he rides a bike? I thought that was just... something you advertise amongst us friends here, okay? And they're like, no, man. And I don't remember who it was that was like, you don't understand the level of athleticism that you have as someone that started later on is something people are very impressed with.
Well, you know.
And if you would have done it younger, you definitely wouldn't be a bankruptcy lawyer. That's what you would have done professionally and for money. And I was like, wow, I never would have.
You know, I don't know if I would have made it to that level. I might have, but. I certainly think if I would have discovered cycling when I was in my teens, I probably never would have become a lawyer. I probably would have. Yeah, I probably would have ended up doing something in that vein, not necessarily being a pro, but you know, maybe owning a bicycle shop or doing something. But I enjoy it a lot, and I'm pretty good at it, and you know, have a lot of fun.
Got it. Well, I greatly enjoyed the breakfast after the bike ride. I'm down for the breakfast after the bike ride in the Grove anytime.
Right. Well, yeah, chocolate croissant.
Getting back on topic.
Right. So where are we?
I don't even
consumer,
know what we're
commercial.
About.
We were back to my cushy job as a no. as a trustee.
No, no, no.
That
no,
I'm running for. Trustees.
We explained liquidation. We need to talk about reorganization.
Okay.
We didn't get to that one. So what all does right. that mean?
So basically, with reorganization, the trustee can't touch anything. They can't take away your non-exempt assets. They can't sue your mom, who you repaid. Or your brother, Well, no, even if it's a legitimate repayment of a legitimate debt within a year of bankruptcy, they can go after mom to get the money back if it wasn't exempt money. But, the trustee's limited. Basically, the Chapter 13 trustee, in the case of an individual who's reorganizing, you propose a plan, and the trustee can say thumbs up to the plan or thumbs down to the plan. And if the trustee says thumbs down to the plan, you can either go to the judge and say, I think my plan is good enough, even though the trustee doesn't like it, judge, you should approve it. Or you can kind of sweeten the pot and say, okay, you know, I'm going to give you a little bit more. I'm going to give more money to the creditors in the plan. So in Chapter 13, it's a much safer venue for people that might have non-exempt assets, that might have...
don't want their mom sued.
They don't want their mom or their brother sued. Call them crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
Can individual creditors say, can they influence at all, or it's just the trustee?
They have a right to be heard. They have a right to be heard.
But do they?
usually it's an ex-spouse, a former business partner.
Sure.
Somebody that wants to
that
drink
knows
your blood.
Full of shit, and I'm coming after you.
Right.
Someone who's angry. There's an emotion.
That's
your credit card company.
MasterCard is not going to come to
you. No, MasterCard is not. Care Credit is not. Lechuga is not none of those.
What is Lechuga?
It's like a
Lechuga?
Like, is it like an online one of the many online lenders?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, write that down. I want
Lechuga.com.
What Lechuga. Doing.
Lechuga.com.
Lechuga.com.
Lettuce.com. This is weird.
I mean, Care Credit's interesting. As soon as you said that, I thought, oh man, I guess a whole lot of plastic surgery is a way to
dental like, work
get rid of some
dental
money.
Work. Plastic surgery,
you know, and I guess if you did that,
usually not good. Usually not good plastic surgery.
No?
Usually like Kmart style plastic surgery.
True.
Yeah, no, for real.
That's not true. How do you know?
Credit card. I've had some work done.
Wait, is that an actual credit card?
Well, so it, you, but you didn't use it for cosmetic surgery. You did. All right. Well, in your case, not Kmart.
But then you didn't go file bankruptcy the next day.
No, I did not. I paid my
this shit back.
I did. Right. I have a Care credit card. I have multiple Care credit cards, actually. We use them for dental work. We use them for plastic surgery. We use them for vets. Veterinarians take Care credit. And vet care is very expensive, for the record, Leslie.
People that make a lot of money can afford to pay 28, 30% interest.
My dog's MRI costs over $3,000. Okay? It's ridiculous.
Oh, no.
But yes,
not as ridiculous as the interest rates.
Yeah. No, but Care credit's 0% for 24 months.
Oh, for you, because you have good credit.
Yeah.
Not
so
for my clients.
And then
for my clients, it's 28, 30%.
Yeah, it snowballs to insanity. But the whole idea, I mean, the reason I like the Care credit card so much specifically is because it covers some stuff that, you will forget the cosmetic surgery, but the dental stuff, the vet bills, they're things you have to do. And they're 0% for 24 months, 36 months in some cases.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, it's really
they're
nice.
Just hoping you
and
don't
so
pay
you can,
that's it. You're never going to pay it off.
Pay it,
and then
you
get a
responsible consumer.
You
put yourself on a 24 month plan, and it's fantastic.
I had no idea it was 0% for a while.
Oh, yeah. It's 0% for sometimes it's 12 months, sometimes 24, sometimes 36. It just depends
on
what.
Well, my clients don't show up with 0% credit cards, They miss that deadline, and that $400 purchase ends up to be a $1,600 purchase.
No, that's absolutely right. Because if you don't pay it off by the 24 months, then it becomes the usual 25% or whatever it is.
Retroactively.
It's throwing this whole
thing. They add up that, and they're sitting there going, man, I hope they don't pay.
We're not in business.
If you're a responsible cardholder, this is a really great card. But yes, of course, anything else,
Well, I assume if you go get the titties, you can't go file bankruptcy 6 months later.
What happens?
And can the Chapter 7 trustee go, this is bullshit?
How are people's
Chapter
titties
7 trustee.
Any different than your gold faucet in your fucking
Well, that's exactly my point. I am comparing. you know, your $10,000
nice hoopah is also
chapter 7 trustee can't investment. Go get your titties.
Right, they can't.
Get my gold faucet.
So in this
an awful chapter 7 right.
What's it called?
Oh yeah,
a revagination.
Like,
I think they call it vagina
rejuvenation.
Rejuvenation.
I'm gonna get my gold faucet.
So much plastic surgery.
So in the case that you just described, 6 months post surgery, the creditor could potentially
like
file.
She did this shit on purpose.
Right. So the
If I'm going down, I'm going down with nice tits. Right.
An allocation of what the titties cost.
All I gotta say about it.
Got you. So, like, for
imputed. I wanted imputed.
For a care credit. Those big creditors, it's a numbers game. You know, they're gonna accept the losses. Now, in the example that you gave, 6 months post surgery, you're gonna try to discharge some care credit that you just got for elective cosmetic surgery. Actually, the creditor could come into court and file an action to determine the debt to be non-dischargeable, saying at the time that you made the charge, you had no intent to repay.
Yeah.
Certain bankruptcy courts around the country are more receptive to that type of adversary proceeding, that type of lawsuit, and other districts are not. Like, so in the Southern District of Florida, the judges aren't really too receptive. They don't like that,
really?
That lawsuit. But like the Western District of Missouri, I mean, you know, you make a cash advance like 9 or 10 months prior to filing bankruptcy, and those judges are going to listen to a creditor who is trying to say that this potentially should be non-dischargeable. So there's variation in practice around the country.
Are the judges down here just like totally jaded at this point?
No, like, not at all. I don't really know.
Standard operating. I mean, you know,
it's not a gold faucet.
No. No, that's not it. I just think that, you know, it's just not, they're not very receptive to that. I don't know the reasons why, but I'm not trying to like play up to the judges or anything, but we have, as a bankruptcy bar, we have fantastic judges to practice in front of.
That's really nice.
It doesn't matter whether you represent a debtor or a creditor, whether you're on the trustee side or the debtor side or what role you're in. All these judges down here, you're going to get a fair shake. You're going to get a great listening to.
That's nice.
Yeah. I mean, they.
That's a really nice thing.
Other attorney ever says that about in any practice area.
No other attorney says that. No. So it's nice to hear.
That is very nice.
And you don't, if you ever have another bankruptcy attorney on, ask them the same question, and I bet you'll get the same answer.
That's really nice to hear.
Well, it's not an equivalent to this, but I think the reason why all of this is so interesting to me, I kind of play in that asset restructuring space, right? Whether, you know, asset protection is not a good word these days. Wealth preservation kind of space. So we track bankruptcy case law every year. We get like a book, and this is all the case law that has come out and how it may affect any one of your clients. But not only that, there's that kind of trustee receivership thing that's naturally in estate in probate.
Sure.
Where you have a trustee or you have a personal representative, and sometimes you don't have anybody that can serve. Mm-hmm. And the lawyers themselves will serve as curator or will serve as, which is essentially, I need to go after all of these assets. I need to know who's trying to fuck the estate. Mm-hmm. I need to know where money was stolen from.
Right.
And I'm coming at you, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're paid out of the estate. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean to criticize, you know, Chapter 7 trustee that hires himself and his law firm to be lawyer, because I absolutely do the same fucking thing. Thank you very much. So I totally get it, which it's all a very forensic kind of analysis of where's the money? Where did it go if it went anywhere? And how the fuck do I get it back? Because I have a fiduciary duty to these people, to these beneficiaries, right?
So you have estates and we have estates.
Exactly. So I track this very much. So we haven't talked about the famous people that have filed.
That's true, because we self-describe as a podcast that talks about the current event stuff of each area of law. And I think there's a lot of current event people we could talk about. There's some past ones, too, that I think are
pretty interesting. Well, the past ones, I was just trying to think who the current ones are, and I can't really remember.
I mean, dare I mention our former president?
Well, you know, I don't think he filed. I think some of his I think some of his businesses did.
Okay,
and if you go online, you'll find some of these compilations, and some of them correctly distinguish between entities filing bankruptcy and individuals.
And some of them don't, because I did some Googling before you came on.
Right, some of them don't, you know, and I'm sure there's no agenda there.
But, you know, I noticed some trends. I noticed some trends.
Presidents.
I noticed some presidents.
Yeah.
I noticed a lot of musicians.
Wait, what other presidents are we?
Lincoln?
Interesting.
Grant, U.S. Grant?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But the musicians I thought were interesting, and also athletes. Yep. And I remember at some point sitting down with someone, God, I don't remember who it was, talking about, it was like a credit repair company or something that I had spoken to years ago. My parents spoke to, I think, years ago. Mm-hmm. And the guy was talking about how it's very typical for athletes in particular. Like, they get recruited so young, a lot of them don't know, and they have these amazing skills, and suddenly here's a lot of money, and a lot of them go and blow it because they don't get the right amount of financial planning.
And then they find fucking whores.
Right.
Miami Beach.
Were you talking to my buddy Chris Colston?
I don't know.
So my buddy Chris Colston, that he's with Second Chance Credit. He'd be a great interview for you guys.
Sure.
But he chose as a niche or a niche to go after the professional athlete market. And he has lots of relationships with lots
Miami
of
Miami Dolphins in particular.
All
across, I bet it was him.
All across,
I remember the story.
All across the NFL.
Yeah.
But yeah, unfortunately, these young men are very, very young.
Yeah.
And they've been, in many cases, graduated through the years with maybe not getting as much education as they otherwise would have had they not been such prized assets on the football field.
Sure.
And so, you know, they end up with multi-million dollar contracts, and you know,
they're rich.
They've
overnight.
Never had a checking account.
They're rich overnight. They're rich overnight.
And it's sad because some of them end up like with nothing. You know, NFL stands for not for long.
Not for long.
You know, sometimes it's terrible. Just because, you know, their skills don't keep up with the competition. Sometimes they get injured. But, you know, that first $12 million or $15 million or 10 or however, whatever size contract, that might be the only one they ever get. And
if they've blown it all on a good time or bad advisors, because a lot of them end up in tax problems, which is kind of unfathomable to the rest of us.
I think most of it is tax. So interestingly, I was reading about this when I was doing my research before Jimmy came on, and I found that most of the celebrity stories that I read, and maybe this is just what people report on, but most of them seem to be tax issues. Almost all of them were tax issues that I was reading. I actually even made a list.
I mean, even Shakira has bullshit going on in Spain with tax issues.
And some of those are born out of mismanagement, but also some of them were misled. So, like, Wesley Snipes was one of the most famous. Poor guy. I think he ended up doing time.
He did. Yeah, he did.
Because he got some guy in his ear who was telling him all of this, oh, the tax code is a voluntary tax code. That means you only have to pay taxes if you want to, right?
The rest of us are just so charitable.
Right? Yeah. The rest of the world just wants to pay their taxes, but since you don't want to, you don't have to, Wesley.
Right.
Nice.
And you should go on just public television and say those things that you refuse to pay taxes.
Right.
Yes.
And then by the time, you know, somebody...
Well, I tell people all the time, because there's, I think one of the biggest misconceptions is, like, if you get a gift in excess of a certain amount of money, and that number changes every year, it is never the person that receives the fucking gift that owes the gift tax, people. I know that sounds very counterintuitive, because I'm giving you something. I'm the asshole that needs to at least report and potentially pay for that gift, not the receiver.
Yeah, a gift is not income to the
recipient. You get $15 million as an NFL, or I win the lotto or whatever, and you're like Oprah, right? A house for you and a whatever for you.
Right.
And everybody gets a house. My whole fucking family of 22 cousins.
None of those cousins have to pay the tax.
Your dumbass is on the radar, right? If you're in the NFL or you just won the lotto or whatever the fuck, IRS is not interested in poor people. They're just not. It's not worth it to them, right? So this is an interesting...
I mentioned musicians. I mean, the list was crazy. I didn't write all of them down, but 50 Cent, Toni Braxton, MC Hammer, Dionne Warwick, Cyndi Lauper. I mean, the list is huge.
Yeah, it goes on.
Yeah,
on
and most of them were tax issues that I was reading. Most of them were tax issues.
Well, we say there's a saying in asset protection, wealth preservation world. So your worst creditors, there's three: bankruptcy trustee, your potential ex-spouse, and the IRS. These are your super creditors, right? These people have fucking power and motivation to come after you that other creditors dream about in their sleep.
And former business partners.
And former business partners certainly know a lot So
they know a lot.
They know a lot.
They've been to your house.
They do. They know about that gold faucet.
They've seen that stuff.
And your titties. And your titties. They know about your titties.
They know about your titties.
They've touched those titties.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't go.
Maybe.
Let it be known. I did not go there for once. I'm not the one that went there, okay?
Just this one time.
Just this one time.
Right. 12 episodes.
I feel honored.
Was it me?
Okay. Was it me?
Sinbad also had a tax issue. He filed for bankruptcy also.
Right.
A comedian.
But actually,
Burt Reynolds.
When we were, very young, we're still very young for the record. You too, Schwitzhaler. You're a spring chicken. But when we were very young, and what was...
He's in probably better shape than I.
Oh, he is. 100%.
I could use a little care credit.
If we do one of those
cards, I could lend you.
How much time do I have? 3 years?
24 months.
You know one of those age tests where, like, you do all these things and it tells you, like, you're whatever the fuck age. Like, Jimmy's going to, like, rank younger than I am, for sure. But, what was that three women pop group? Da-da-da, waterfalls. Some bullshit.
TLC.
Okay.
TLC.
These women, after, and this is when we were, like, in high school, had a massive, like...
I could sing the entire rap portion of that song, for the record.
You're kidding me right now.
No, I could, but I'm not going to.
Okay, that's in the bloopers. We're going to do that after. But after, like, their biggest, like, tour, and I've always heard that celebrities, singers and whatever, make a lot of their money, not from record sales, mm-hmm. but from actually the tours,
touring,
right?
Yeah.
That's where they make the gazillion.
So, actually, Toni Braxton, the reason she's on the list is because she canceled a big tour and she had self-financed it. And
that's
where most of her debt came from for her bankruptcy, because I read that in the article.
And so I could be totally wrong, but I recall back in the day that was like a big thing, because they had just finished their whatever tour and they had made supposedly all of this money, but all of their advisors fucked them, stole money, it was totally mismanaged, and within very short order, everybody is filing bankruptcy because of the mismanagement, all the money that was made on that tour. And one of them spoke out about it, and that's the only reason I'm probably MTV or some shit when I was 15. I don't remember. But I remember thinking, how is that possible, right? Like, this is just wild to me that these people don't have good lawyers, good accountants, good financial advisors, good everything, as I say on my newsletter weekly.
Yeah. You have to realize who they are as people. Not everybody comes from the kind of background where they're highly educated or they know the importance of these things. And you're suddenly handed millions of dollars, and it's like, oh, fuck.
Definitely, it's the exception, not the rule, that you know, somebody comes into major league sports and has somebody who's really watching their back, and then they live frugally. But there's some out there. Yeah. I forget, there was a Phillies first baseman. I forget who he was. This is probably going back 10 or 15 years, but his mom put him on a salary. It's like,
I love that.
Yeah, he made sure that mom got all the money, and she gave him basically an allowance, you know, and he didn't go out and buy the.
We have to limit the
three
Coke
Rolls
Royces, guys.
The what?
The Coke and whores. We have to limit.
Yeah,
mom was like
zero.
Not
yeah, like
doing this.
Let me see how much for the Coke. Oh, zero for the Coke.
Zero for Coke.
Whores, mom. No, zero for whores too.
No, Jimmy.
That's
when we fire mom, Jimmy.
No,
she can't be that strict.
This guy was smart. He knew what was good for him, and he played by the rules. So for South Florida, old South Florida football fans like me, one of the Miami Dolphins filed a bankruptcy. And this is going back probably 15 or 20 years. Mercury Morris.
Yeah. That's before our time.
No, you don't even know who I'm talking
about. We have no idea.
Speak for yourself.
That's before our time. You're younger than I am.
I am actually not into sports at all, but my father was a Miami Dolphin obsessed.
Of course.
Interesting.
Not a fair weather fan, a diehard with his season tickets until the day he died. And
nice.
I grew up in a household obsessed with the Miami Dolphins.
I would not
appreciation for any of this, but.
Right?
But so I
but
can
you heard
talk
the name
the talk.
Mercury Morris?
I could talk the talk as of like 10 years ago. Anything that happened in the last 10 years, I have no concept because I'm not interested at all. But before that, I grew up in a with Shula all over my living room and Marino all over the place, and I could talk to you about the perfect season in the 70s, and we could have all.
Well, jump back on the bandwagon. We got a good team this year.
I don't know. I lost touch once like J-Lo owned part of the team. I'm done.
I don't even know if they still do that. But
no, they think they do, but.
No, we got a great quarterback. We got fantastic.
Who is this person?
Tua.
Tua, get good advisors so you don't have to file bankruptcy.
Oh, no, listen, he is.
His name is Tua?
Tua is his first name. Oh. Tonga Vailoa is his last name. And
where is this guy from?
He's from.
Interesting name.
Either Hawaii or. Yeah.
I was going to say, it sounds like.
Oh, that is
It sounds
so
Hawaiian.
Random.
He is. Okay. He comes from a fantastic family. They're Hawaiian, very tight. And this is not a guy who is gonna
no coke and horse for you to.
He's set up. He has a foundation. He's doing good works with his money. So this is a good person.
Footballer.
It happens.
Okay. Footballer.
You sound like you're from Britain talking about a soccer player.
Yes. That's exactly what footballer. I thought. About. I don't know anything about American football, for the record.
What?
I don't. I really don't.
She's into soccer. Too bad.
Where'd you go to undergrad?
University of Florida.
They have a football team.
I know. It was right across from the fucking engineering building. And I was like, can they fucking pipe down? We're studying.
You and your slippers?
Hard, guys. Yes, me and my pajamas and my slippers. Like,
even back in the day?
Across the street. Like,
oh, my gosh.
No, I was at University of Florida because Columbia did not take me. So this is quite a traumatizing moment in my life. Well, anyway, we're not going there.
They didn't have a football
team. That is all another day, okay? Yeah.
I was about to say.
How about you? What's your undergrad?
Yeah, I went to NYU, so no football. We had a fencing team.
Didn't you tell me the Bobcats or something?
Fancy.
Bobcats was our mascot, but there's no football team as far as I know. Oh, it's fencing was like the thing. Yeah.
If there were a football team and their mascot was Bobcats, they get laughed off the
Bobcats. And then I did a whole year.
Listen, a Bobcats is an improvement. The mascot used to be the Fighting Violets. Like the flower, they were violet, they were purple.
What?
Oh, yeah, because
Fighting
the
violets. Now, purple is a good color.
Just abandon that. But
I don't know about.
So at some point, they changed it to the Bobcats. Yeah, yeah. But interestingly enough, I'm a triple Bobcat. So going all the way back, I went to my middle school. My middle school was Conchita Espinosa, which was the Bobcats.
Espinosa.
And then I went to Lourdes and I was a Bobcat again. And then I went to NYU where I continued to be a Bobcat. So I was a Bobcat almost my whole life.
Well, I think law school, you must still be a Bobcat.
It changed when I went to law school.
But the funny part is, so obviously UF, it's a big deal, right? There's mm-hmm. a fucking football team that greatly annoyed me every time I was trying to study. But I come down to FIU and I actually spend two semesters at FIU as a transfer student here in Miami. That's how I ended up later in Miami. And the first football game I ever went to was a very sad FIU football game that I was like,
Golden Panthers.
I don't understand. The Golden Panthers. This is not all
what
the noise
did
I heard.
They throw rats on the ice?
Ice? Huh? No.
She shifted on you. She started talking hockey.
We're talking about hockey.
I was like, I was at the wrong game. I was like, there was no ice.
That was a joke that just went like.
She's like, but she was afraid for a moment because she was leaving open the possibility that there really is ice involved in football. Because that's the level
for one game, and it was in the summer or something. I don't know.
Face was like, what? What? Anyways, I'm sorry.
And I remember really thinking at that point, I should have went to a football game at University of Florida because
gone to a football game.
Yes.
Sorry, that was my dad.
My dad did the same shit to me. And the funny thing is, my dad was not born in this country, and he used to criticize my English and go, "Who's the fucking American here?" Is what he used to tell me as he corrected my fucking grammar.
Because he was the product of a good education system.
And he learned, very strict rules.
Not so much
in his English speaking school. In Buenos Aires. So yes, he was like always correcting me and my sister for our bad grammar and our bad English. And I used to be like, okay, dad.
Me and my dad are probably getting along famously right now.
Yes. Well, he's so I should have seen a football game at UF because when I came down here and saw my first football game, this ain't the kind of party that I was listening to from literally a block away.
Right. Seven people here.
This is bullshit. I didn't drink in college.
Football is huge at UF. Never go to a football game. I'm not even into football and I would have gone to a game.
Well, because you're all about cruise director. You're all about this is where the party's at.
Absolutely.
I'm going to 100%. Where the party's at.
If there's a giant stadium of people yelling, you need to check it out before you graduate. One time.
Okay, this is not my jam. I should have done many things.
Engineering. Wow.
Yeah. Me, lo chino, lo indio. We didn't really go to the football game.
All right.
Anyway.
Coming back to bankruptcy.
Tell us about Alina's $500,000 of student debt she has from NYU.
That's exactly
in Boston.
What I wanted to talk about. Wow. I want to talk about student debt.
Because, she, and Manny. Manny, one of the partners in my law firm, mm-hmm. undergrad UM, law school UM, and all this bullshit UM. And, you know, that guy's going to die with student debt. Like, that shit's never getting paid back. But maybe there are other options for Manny. He's not exactly high income.
Yeah, it's tough. So,
for the record.
Allegedly.
For the record, I had great scholarships. But go on, please.
Yeah. So, student loans, there's certain types of debts that are non-dischargeable. You can't get rid of them in bankruptcy. And student loans are one of those, and they're automatically non-dischargeable, which means your student loan lender doesn't need to come into court and say, hey, you can't get rid of this, judge, don't let them get rid of it. It's automatically non-dischargeable. So if a student files a bankruptcy and they want to get rid of their student loans, they have to file a lawsuit within the bankruptcy. It's called an adversary proceeding.
Oh, they themselves?
Yeah, the student borrower has to file a lawsuit, and they have to allege, and they have to prove undue hardship, that it would be an undue hardship for them to repay. That's a pretty vague description. So here in the Southern District of Florida, we're part of the 11th Circuit, which includes Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. And so the 11th Circuit follows this case called Brunner. And it's one of those bad facts make bad law cases.
Yes.
So Brunner was this wonderful lady who graduated from medical school, put everything on the student loans. And this was back in the day. And she immediately, 6 months later, went to discharge these student loans.
Because that's when you would do it, before you start making money. Hello.
Right.
Obviously, right. Shwatala, we got to be strategic about
this. So anyway, the Brunner case basically says, if you want to get rid of your student loans, you have to prove three things. Number one, you don't have the present ability to pay the student loans,
okay,
while still maintaining a minimal standard of living for yourself
that
and your dependents.
That seems like a reasonable one. Go
number
on.
Two, that inability to repay is going to persist for a majority of the repayment period.
But that's like 30 years.
A majority of the repayment period would be like 15 of a 30-year. Or if you
that's
had
really
if you had 10-year loans, you'd have to prove that, you know, for at least 5 years. If you were trying to get rid of them right at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
And then the third thing is...
So you have like a physical incapacity or something that doesn't allow you to do the job that you went to school for, and therefore that's going to persist?
Well, maybe. So hold on a second. Okay. So the third thing is that you've made a good faith effort to repay.
Well,
okay.
I mean...
Well, some people... Well, a lot of people struggle with these student loan debts a long time, and then they're not filing a bankruptcy because of student loans, because the word on the street is you can't get rid of student loans. They end up in bankruptcy typically for a different reason. Credit cards, foreclosure.
Care credit.
Somebody died. Somebody got divorced. Somebody lost a job. There's a reason why they filed a bankruptcy. So the catch-22 is, if you really do have an undue hardship, you can't pay the lawyer to do the adversary proceeding, because this is not a cheap process.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Historically.
Oh, bullshit. They're allowed to use that against you?
No, listen to me.
No. He's saying on a practical level.
I thought that was in the Brunner case. Like,
No.
That's
bullshit.
So as he's saying this is what I was thinking.
He was like legitimately outraged.
Yeah.
Okay. So the idea is,
who's got the
if you can afford to pay me to litigate in federal court against the federal government, then you don't have an undue hardship.
Right.
Right? And if you do have an undue hardship, you can't afford to pay me.
Exactly.
It's expensive.
Exactly. Yeah.
So historically, when you file an adversary proceeding, the Department of Justice, who is involved with the trustees, U.S. trustees, and the Department of Education, is typically the defendant. And so they come in, they're basically an arm of the federal government, and they're like, no, we're not going to agree that this is an undue hardship. And they fought you tooth and nail the whole way. Well, I will hand something to the Biden administration. They did something that was within their power, and it is aimed at actually getting relief to student loan borrowers who are in bankruptcy who need it. And what they've done is, this was last about a year ago, and in the fall of 22. They passed new guidance, and they issued this guidance to the Department of Education and the Department of Justice. And it's like this 18 pages telling those departments how to interpret the Brunner test.
Okay.
Okay. So what is a good faith effort to repay?
Okay.
What constitutes an inability to pay the student loans while still maintaining a minimal standard of living? And the basic thrust of this guidance is to really kind of like
Back off.
Back off. Yeah, don't oppose them so aggressively.
Right.
So I just filed my first one recently. And I'm interested to see what their response is going to be. This particular set of facts is the client actually has a decent income, but he lives at home. He's got children that he pays child support on. He pays alimony. And when you look at this guy's income and expense, there's no coke and horse. Yeah. This guy
has money for that.
No,
that's expensive.
But nobody, this guy has really good income. And, okay. and that's where I'm not sure if we're going to be able to discharge the student loans. But this particular guy has really good income. But when you look at his actual money coming in and his actual money going out, there's really nothing that you can point at in his expenses and criticize him.
Right.
I mean, he's paying out the nose for alimony and out the ears for child support.
Oh, interesting.
And he's a good dad, and he's, you know, involved with his kids. And he's like literally lives with his parents. This guy is in his probably mid-30s. And he doesn't pay his parents any rent because he can't afford to pay his parents any rent. So although he has a very good, stable job and makes money, he can't pay his student loans.
He has legitimate
expenses. It's all legit. Right. You can't pick out anything on his list of expenses that you could criticize and say, okay, look, if you just give this up, you'd have some money to pay the student loans.
Sure, and especially because there are court orders for that alimony and that child support. Yes. So that's interesting because there weren't court orders for it and you're just paying for the usual things that kind of already goes to, right? The daycare and the tennis lessons and whatever the fuck is going for the kids.
Right.
That's not on his kind of income statement. Yeah. That's on the other person's income statement. So that's super interesting. But is that situation, he's only 30-something years old. Is that situation, not that the situation itself is not going to persist, it will, but his income can
so go I up. Was about to right. ask in a similar vein about their ability to pay. Mm-hmm. How do you prove they don't have the ability to pay eventually, if not today? Or do you even need to show that? So I'm thinking of someone who maybe has like a temporary injury, but mm-hmm. we don't know how long it's going to persist, or they have a medical condition, or, you know, if you have cancer today and you can't repay, but you go into remission next year, like is that something they even take into account, that that's a possibility? I'm curious.
So remember this, the way I presented them, the second prong was that the inability to pay is likely to persist for a majority of the repayment period.
And I guess my question is, how do they analyze that?
Well, first of all, you have to look at the loans and see how long the repayment period is. So the longer the loan, the more difficult it is to prove that your inability to pay is going to persist for that period of time.
And you kind of chose that at the beginning of the loan.
But most of the loans, for sure.
Which is interesting. Most people don't know this,
most
right?
Most student loans are like forever endeavor. Like, well, because you choose or some shit.
Some of them are fives, some of them are tens, but I think the great majority are 20s and 30s.
Yeah, like the really the high-end ones are like most of the ones I got. Let's just say
when
that
you
way.
Start getting into the six-figure student loans, the terms are much longer.
Interesting. Yeah. So all of this is, as I say, to be litigated.
Yeah, but the general thrust of this guidance that the Biden administration gave to the Department of Justice and the Department of Education really is to like look for a way to find undue hardship.
Unless somebody that got out and they're committing fraud, let's get softer on this. Got it.
So they give examples, right?
Okay.
Well, I like examples.
So for example,
that's kind of where I was trying to go.
Right. Yeah. So the one of the examples is, you know, you ask the typical person on the street, okay, there's a guy who's trying to get rid of his student loans, and one of the things he has to prove is that he's made a good faith effort to repay. Right. You ask the typical guy on the street, what would that include? And the guy would be like, well, I guess
twice,
you know, okay, fine. Right.
So you made a couple payments at some point.
Right. Now, the guidance.
Or you sent $20 when it was like
the guidance,
minimum payment.
Here's what the guidance boils down to. If the presentation of the debtor is, you know, one time I sat and I thought really hard about how I was going to pay one payment. Believe it or not, the guidance suggests that is a good faith effort to repay.
Wow.
Really?
Yes. So they specifically say that you don't need to have ever made a payment.
Interesting.
Why does the pendulum swing in such extreme ways? Swings.
Well, look. You know, I
about
think
making a payment once,
right?
But then I went to the club,
like, right? Like, well, we wouldn't include that in his affidavit in support of.
You would be like, you know, he lost sleep
in the event that he did make some payments. That sounds like a pretty strong case then.
Yes. So, like, if you have a client who's made payments, it's like, wow, we've hit the first prong. Yeah. Because the first prong, yeah, the guidance says we just have to think about it. In this case, we actually made a payment. So, first prong taken care of. Ding, yeah, check mark. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So, anyway, I'm just very excited to see
we've served. And then second one, I'm going to go refinance all my fucking loans so that they're 5 years instead of 30.
The second one was, right, that they was going to last for the half of the whatever. What was the third one? I forgot.
So I presented them improperly. The first one should have been, you made a good faith effort to repay.
Okay.
The second one is, you have a present inability to pay while still maintaining a middle... while still maintaining a minimal standard of living for yourself and your dependents.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is that...
Wait, so does that mean if you're making zero money, you're not going to qualify?
No. If you're making zero money, then you definitely don't have the ability...
Well, how are you maintaining a standard of living for yourself and your dependents?
You live with your mom.
You don't have the ability to pay while still maintaining a minimal standard of living.
Oh, okay. While still maintaining.
Right. So, I mean, if you're... Let's say, to use an example that you use, somebody's injured or somebody's sick.
Sure.
They're living at home.
Sure.
With their parents. And they're being supported.
Girlfriend is paying for it.
Right. So they have no income, but, you know, their needs are being met.
Sure,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
But they don't have a dollar to spend on the student loan, so present inability to make payments.
Okay, all right.
And then the last one is the inability is going to likely to persist for a majority of the repayment period. So
before, under this, this was Ms. Brunner, you said?
Brunner.
Ms. Brunner. Brunner, MD. So before, Ms. Brunner basically had to show she was quadriplegic and could never be a doctor ever. So in order to get them discharged, that was kind of the old standard. Very strict.
Well, okay. So
like, really prove this?
Going way, way back.
It was never.
Student loans were freely dischargeable.
Oh, before. Well,
there was no difference.
Right.
Before we were in law school.
Yeah. And then I forget exactly how the progression worked, but then it worked. Okay. Student loans were freely dischargeable. And then they became, all right, student loans are only dischargeable if you've had them for a certain period of time.
Okay.
And then it became, okay, student loans are only freely dischargeable after you've had them for a certain period of time and only in chapter 13.
Oh,
so they said you had to go in and make some payments for a while.
Okay.
And then in an education bill, they slipped one in at the very end, and they made it so that student loans are automatically non-dischargeable, and then you have to prove undue hardship. And then came the Brunner test. So I don't really recall the facts exactly what they were, but
that's all right. In a practical sense, when you're assessing a case and you look at somebody and go, you got two arms, two legs, and whatever, we ain't going to be able to discharge your student loans, right?
Well,
I mean, well, now that's different, is what he said.
Now it's different. What was it before? Like, what was your litmus test of like, don't bullshit me, it's never going to work, we're not going to try it? Like,
so the one case that I took, I did it pro bono. The client couldn't afford to pay me, and I felt really bad for her. This particular lady, it took her like 6 or 7 years to get through a 2 or 3 year chiropractic program. She had learning disabilities. She had physical ailments. She had kids who were like super, super young, like 2 and 3 years old.
Yeah.
Her husband was a mechanic. She could never pass her state boards. Because she just couldn't pass. She wouldn't. In fact, she would not have passed. This is what she told me. She would not have passed chiropractic school. The last class that she had to pass, she was failing, and the professor said, "If you go donate blood, I'll give you a D." And she donated blood, and the professor gave her a D, and she passed. And then, of course, she gets out. And by the way, the chiropractic college, you know, milked her. They should have told her after the first year, you know, this is really not, you're not really cut out for this. But instead, they were receiving that good federal student loan money. Yeah. So they just kept re-enrolling her and re-enrolling her.
And by the way, there's a whole conversation to be had about the school's responsibilities and all of this. I was saying there's something to be said about the school's level of responsibility here, because thinking back to my experience, I loved going to NYU. Don't get me wrong. I did great there. Wouldn't take it back at all for anything. It was a great experience. But I don't remember a single time where anyone stopped and said, hey, like, how much debt did you get into to do this?
Oh, like, or a financial counselor.
Is this worth the long-term benefit you're going to get? Or even in high school, and I went to Lourdes, like, I went to a great school, there was no conversation of, is this in your best interest long-term?
Right.
Because my parents were not rich people who could pay $40,000 of tuition. And if it wasn't for the fact that I got a scholarship for most of my cost of education, I wouldn't have even gone to NYU. I still took out loans to finish paying the rest of it and live in Manhattan, which was a very expensive prospect even back then. But nobody ever. Like, I think back now and I'm like, man, if I ever had a kid, which I don't want, but if I ever had a kid... For the record. But if I ever had a kid, I feel like there's such a conversation as a parent now to be had with my experience and say, like, no, like, this going to an Ivy League just for the sake of going to the Ivy League is so not worth it financially, unless there's, like, an end sight or a goal that requires this kind of path.
Yeah. No, you know I agree. No, like, listen, I agree.
It's crazy.
The schools... It's against their better interest, though, right? Their better interest is to get as many students as possible and and enroll them in as many classes as possible. And so I guess that's what happened in this case. And so she, this lady graduates from chiropractic college, and she can't pass the state boards, and she can't pass the national boards.
No, this case is unconscionable.
Yeah, and then no chiropractor even wants to hire her to even empty the garbage because they're afraid that she wants it so bad that she's going to maybe say something to a patient or something like that. So anyway, if there was ever a person who had, and she had made payments, you know, she and her husband had struggled and had made payments. So if there was ever a person who had made the payments, made a good faith effort to repay, had the present inability, and the good faith, anyway, hit all the boxes. We went to trial. The Department of Education hired excellent counsel to oppose us every step of the way. And one of the things that the 11th Circuit is clear about is that there's no partial discharge, right? So it's an all or nothing. You're either going to win and you're going to wipe out all the debts or you're going to lose and you're not going to wipe out any of the debts. Well, we had a visiting judge from Missouri, and the visiting judge I still remember this. We were on the 14th floor of the Claude Pepper Federal Building, and there was some guy out there hanging from a rope outside the window. They were doing work on the building, and they were literally like jackhammering the side of the wall just like outside of the courtroom. So that's the judge. The judge was like ready to crawl out of his skin by the time we finished this trial. And you, what did he rule? Partial discharge, because in that case the attorney was actually representing two lenders, and he says to him, you know, your one client, you can call him lucky because they only lent a little bit of money, and your other client, you can call him unlucky because they lent the huge majority of the debt. And this lady, this is going back probably 25 years, she had like over $250,000 of debt, which was probably about worth about $500,000 today, right?
That's a lot.
And the judge ruled that she could discharge the debt owed to the bank that had lent the huge amount of money, but that she couldn't discharge the debt to the bank that only had lent a little bit of money. And that went directly against the partial discharge rule that the 11th Circuit already had in place. So, of course, they appealed, it got reversed on appeal. So, so that satisfied my curiosity about representing people pro bono for student loan discharges. Spent a lot of time and worked hard on that case, and we should have won, and we didn't win. So
I'm very curious to hear how your new case goes. And have there been any decisions yet since this came down from the Biden administration?
Through the grapevine, I haven't heard any. And I haven't gone out and looked at the case law to see if there is any, but it's certainly...
I imagine some attorneys have started to test the...
Oh, yeah. I imagine. Hopefully, there's no cases reported because they're just rolling over and agreeing that it should be discharged. And so there's no contest. There's no case. There's no reported decision.
What Pollyanna thinking, Shatala?
A guy can dream, right? I can dream, can I? Don't take that away from me, Leslie.
Now you've made me want to go research this, because I'm like, I have like 10 referrals for you to do right now. If this works, you let me know, because I know a lot of lawyers.
Well, the downside is you got to file a bankruptcy, right?
In this particular case,
this guy files he's in a Chapter 7. He doesn't have any obligation to make any payments to creditors. He doesn't have any non-exempt assets. He doesn't have any transfers to friends and family members. He doesn't make "quote unquote," too much money because it was family size, and so he qualifies for Chapter 7. The problem was with a lot of professionals, you know, they're not going to necessarily qualify for a 7. That means they're going to be committed to a 5-year repayment plan in a Chapter 13. They don't have to pay all of it, but in some cases they would. Yeah. In many cases, they would have to make a payment that's uncomfortably large. But, you know, I'm always willing to talk to them, give them the straight scoop on what their options are.
Uncomfortably large. I like that.
Yes.
I feel like my payments are uncomfortably large already.
Coke, it's like zero. Whores, like zero.
Gold faucet, zero. Right. I mean, all we're three fully at life, guys. I mean, we're fully at life. We have none of those things.
Are like a mortgage.
For a lot of people. They're a mortgage. Or more.
I mean, for me, it's a mortgage, basically. It's just under the mortgage that I pay for.
There's a lot of people in the
and I'm 20... thankful and I knock on wood that I can pay it and I'm doing well, but I can easily imagine how most people
there's a lot of people in the 20 year to 40 year age range that you know are can't get a home because they can't afford one because they're 100%. Paying their student loans
100%. Anyway,
fantastic.
We can't go back in time. I tell that to a lot of clients. There's no rewind button in life because, you know, they keep out, well, what if this would have happened? And I'm like, it didn't.
That doesn't matter.
And this is why I say that if I ever had children, this is a conversation I would very much have.
You'd make a great mom.
Fuck that. on that note.
Side note.
You don't know me, Jimmy. I'm an anti-kid kind of girl. My dogs will love me unconditionally until the day they die.
And your child will not. But you would love your child unconditionally.
Your child will not.
Trust me.
Terrible.
And they will cost much more money. But still. Right?
But I digress. On that note, I think we're out of time. Is there anything you would like to share with our viewing and listening audience before we go?
Like what?
Any final words of wisdom?
You have gotta go get your blood faucets, your titties, and everything else.
You know how Jerry Springer,
you file a chapter 7.
Jerry Springer would end every show with the same quote. They would all beat the crap out of each other, and then he'd get on camera and he'd say, "Take care of yourselves and each other."
Oh,
I always thought it was hilarious after everyone beat the crap out of each other on his show.
Well, my the few Instagram posts that I do, tell me. Typically
are you on Instagram.
Yeah, but not a lot.
You're on my Facebook.
Not a lot.
I don't know. I post stuff to Instagram and then it goes to Facebook.
What is going on today with people anti Facebook but on Instagram?
It's we are geriatric like millennials, my friend.
That's what
Facebook is for old people. Ya lo último, okay? This is unbelievable. Okay.
All right. We digress. Are those the closing words?
Facebook is for old people.
And racist.
My hashtag is do something nice for somebody.
I like that.
Aww.
Do something nice for somebody. I like that.
So.
And with that, we will end this episode. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Thank you, Jimmy, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. And we'll see you again next time on Lasha You Should Know.